This is Indian Noir. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 11 of His Night Begins. Virat's left hand was in a cloth sling as he drove one-handed for hours in a painkiller haze. When he arrived at the pastor's compound, just after 4:30 in the afternoon, he was greeted by a gory display that made his stomach turn. Virat stared in horror at Sartaj's head stuck on a pike, planted in front of the sanctuary's iron gates. The pastor and his wife were sitting at the foot of the morbid installation. The bikers encircled them, their heads bowed mournfully. It was a silent funereal circle, reminiscent of a medieval painting. Virat exited the vehicle and joined the mourners. After a while, Virat said, "They're coming for us tonight." The pastor slowly stood up, anger writ large on his face. The bikers took the cue and moved back. The pastor's wife still sat on the ground, weeping. "What happened, Virat?" the pastor inquired. Virat explained the circumstances surrounding his injured hand and foot, the sudden appearance of Aman Godwane, and most pertinently, the sad news of Ladu Vinayak's passing. "What are we going to do?" the pastor asked.
"You should leave with your people,"
Virat began saying. "That would be running and hiding. And you know they will hunt us down no matter what." "Tell me I am wrong," the pastor said. Virat nodded.
"You're right. And yes, it is better to stay and fight."
The pastor looked at Sartaj's pale head. His dead eyes were staring up at the sky, and his mouth was framed in a painful expression.
"He suffered," the pastor said.
Then he looked down at his wife.
"Now she is suffering."
Sartaj was like a son to her. Virat cast a sad glance at the pastor's wife and sighed. Then he scanned the sorrowful faces around him.
"Today we have lost a brave and loyal ally. Our friend, a brother, taken by deceit, slain by cowards. The same enemy will be here by nightfall to finish us. And it is my express wish and your leader's desire to stay back and fight these monsters," Virat said.
The bikers straightened their slouched shoulders and listened intently.
"I have a plan, but I cannot execute it without your help."
Everyone nodded determinedly. At this point, Praveen had walked out of the clinic and joined them. He looked at the gory sight fearfully and turned to his father for assurance.
"I am assuming you have a bunker here,"
Virat asked the pastor.
"Yes, but it wouldn't hold more than 15 people, the pastor said.
"And I'm hoping this plan of yours doesn't involve hiding in a hole for months."
"Some key people will need to lay low if we are to succeed in this mission,"
Virat said, looking at Praveen and then at the pastor's wife.
"Get me some hay, rope and metal pipes,"
Virat said to the bikers, before casting a glance at some of the Harleys in front of the sanctuary.
"I'm afraid some of those will need to be sacrificed tonight."
Virat noticed a group of shepherds commanding a huge tribe of goats, watching them from across the road.
"How faithful are the locals to you?"
Virat asked the pastor.
"Very," said the pastor. My dormitories are crowded with their children seeking treatment for addiction. They will do anything to protect them and us.
Good, Virat said. We will need their eyes and ears.
Virat waved at the shepherds, and they waved back.
Virat, what is your plan?
The pastor asked. Virat scanned the eager faces around him, and then turned to the pastor and said,
Before I tell you that, I need to call someone.
Aman Godwane watched the fleeting blur of the Badlands from his speeding Benz. He knew places like this intimately. He had grown up in a similar part of India. His parents were sharecroppers who ran up debts and were murdered by the goons of loan sharks. The people who killed his parents were rich. The neighbors who betrayed them by showing the machete-wielding thugs their hiding place were poor farmers like them. The incident taught Aman a valuable lesson. There is no point in reserving your compassion for the less fortunate. They were just the same as the cunning wealthy, looking for a chance to prosecute their agenda of betrayal to make a quick buck. The true religion was the cult of the self. Aman believed in fulfilling his ambition at the cost of everything else. Aman's driver had decided to play some old spaghetti western tunes, and the cartel boss thought it suited the sights of drought-ridden fields and orchards along the highway. The dry climate had brought poverty to the breadbasket of the country. And where there was poverty, there was a strong desire to check out of life. The syndicate was here to lend a helping hand. As far as Aman was concerned, he was doing a social service. His drugs helped ease suffering. He had similar justifications for his previous endeavors. Gun running supported freedom fighters. Smuggling delivered expensive goods to the masses at reasonable rates. Sex trafficking of underage girls fed the needs of animals who would otherwise rampage through the streets, raping and murdering women. Aman was never the villain of the story. That was but a myth crafted by those who misunderstood him. The syndicate was an unheralded Indian business success story. A remarkable act of entrepreneurship yet to be replicated in other industries. A shining example of determination, passion, and purpose. Aman should have been lauded. He should have been feted with awards. Interviewed by TV channels every 2 days. Books should have been written about his inspiring rise to become one of the most successful business leaders in India. Why then was he denied these accolades? Because some sought to portray him as a criminal? His activities as illegal? Heartless labels heaped on his achievements by small minds. The blood he had spilled to unify inefficient and unproductive gangs under the banner of the syndicate would have filled the Arabian Sea many times over. Yet all he received for his hard work was ingratitude. He couldn't stand the insults, so he decided to operate from the shadows. For a while, the other puppets, including the incompetent lunatic Pepe, took over the reins and things seemed to be on the right path. It worked because he was providing the strategy and directions as the puppet master. But this pest Virat appeared on the scene and wreaked havoc. Chaos attracts chaos. And now he had many gangs vying to destabilize the syndicate. Somehow, people developed the impression that Aman Godwane was no longer in the picture. He couldn't complain about that outcome because he had wanted the anonymity. But what he didn't anticipate was that people don't fear what they can't see. Now, he must be seen. They must witness the atrocities he's capable of.
And to that end, the full force of the syndicate would in the first instance be brought to bear upon Virat and his lackeys. Once he was done burying their corpses, he would deal with the other troublemakers. Aman imagined that in the future, when he looks back at this period, he would surmise, the syndicate was having some troubles, that's all. Like an unexpected afternoon hailstorm that wrecks parked cars. But its foundations were solid, its might unblemished, its vengeful presence omnipresent and omnipotent. And it showed its enduring might by crushing its enemy overnight in an awesome bloody display of shock and awe. He looked at the fleet of vehicles in front of him and behind him. His best men, armed to the teeth. His horsemen of the apocalypse. Oh, the plight of the hapless few who dared to stir the hornet's nest. Aman smiled at the thought as the vehicle sped towards the pastor's sanctuary.
Instead of being stuck in the basement bunker, I could be out there helping you.
Praveen protested.
I know you can, but I want you to be safe and prepare for our trip across the border once tonight's fireworks are over, Virat said.
Praveen looked at his feet in disappointment.
The pastor tells me you have made enough progress for us to move on. He thinks the program has given you the resilience to say no, should temptation strike again.
Praveen looked up and pursed his lips and nodded.
You are addicted to violence the same way I am addicted to drugs, Praveen said, looking accusingly at his father.
I am, I suppose, Virat said.
But that is exactly what will save us now, no? Praveen said.
Virat didn't answer. He looked ashamed.
I don't know if I could ever love you or forgive you for what you have done, but I understand you. I understand how you became who you are, Praveen said.
Virat teared up.
I'm glad. I didn't think it was important for me to be understood, but in these last few months, I have made peace with my nature. And I'm glad you see me for what I am too.
Thank you for keeping me alive, Praveen said.
You have nothing to thank me for. This is my duty. I love you, son, Virat said.
Praveen bent sideways and picked up his duffel bag. The pastor's wife, who was preparing to enter the bunker, approached them. She placed a hand on Praveen's shoulder and looked at Virat.
I will look after him, Virat. You make sure my husband and my boys come out of this safe and sound, she said to him.
I'll do my best. I promise, Babiji, Virat said.
He looked on as the pastor's wife and Praveen climbed down the stairs and entered the bunker, located in the basement of the clinic. The steel, blast-proof door creaked noisily as one of the pastor's helpers closed it shut. Virat watched Praveen's departing figure till he fully disappeared behind the door, knowing fully well that this could be his final glimpse of his son. The last member of his family. Virat didn't want his violent legacy to be continued, but he wanted Praveen to live. So he was going to try darned hard not to die. At least till he got his son to the border. Virat looked at his left hand, which was still in a sling, and at the giant swelling in his left foot. Granted, he was not in the best shape, and their plan to survive the syndicate's upcoming retaliation was on shaky foundations. But he was who he was. He was truly in his element. A shark was the master of turbulent and dangerous waters. That is where it lived, where it hunted, and where it died. Virat had made arrangements for one of the pastor's assistants to take Praveen and the pastor's wife to the border, should he and the others not survive the night. The bunker opened up to a tunnel which extended for nearly a kilometer to the east and offered access to canola fields tended by farmers loyal to the pastor. Virat could proceed with his plans with the knowledge that his son at least had a fighting chance. Better than what Anya and Nirmala and Davina had. The thought made him angry. He could feel the blood boil in his veins. He clenched his fists, trying to contain his outrage. He heard the pastor call out to him.
Virat, it's time, brother.
Virat couldn't afford to lose his focus. He had to be cool and calculated to pull off this audacious plan. He walked towards the reception area of the clinic, through a series of corridors and rooms. When he reached his destination, he was greeted by the sight of the pastor and the bikers, armed and ready, like soldiers waiting for their general's instructions. Virat walked them through the plan again in a calm and methodical fashion. And when he was done, he shook each person's hand and wished them well. He watched them leave the building. When the last person left, he pulled out his wallet and gazed at Anya's photo tearfully. He put the wallet in his back pocket, gathered his weapons load out, and exited the building into the arms of the night. His night had begun, and he entered its gloom like a man who had mastered its essence. Aman Godwane smoothed down the lapels of his ash-grey Italian suit with delicate sweeps of his open palm before pulling the binoculars out of his pocket. He was standing atop a hill, a kilometer away from the sanctuary, surrounded by his best bodyguards. The spot offered an excellent view of the pastor's compound, where Aman was expecting Virat, the pastor, and their men to make their last stand. The three buildings and its grounds were located on the side of a highway which ran through a sparsely populated region. There were no other dwellings for miles in both directions. The emptiness of the vast open land around him was made even more pronounced by the fact that the sanctuary hosted the only source of light in this empire of darkness.
What a delightful setting to face up to my enemies, Aman thought.
There was a slight chance that Virat and the pastor might not have the courage to stand up to him, that they could have fled in the cover of darkness. It didn't matter. Even if they abandoned their base of operations, Aman was going to personally supervise the destruction of their lair. Virat and Co. had burned down his house. Now it was his turn to extend the same courtesy. Once he had burned the place down to the ground, he would hunt them down without mercy. If the man had any honor, he would rise up to Aman's challenge. In fact, from what he had heard of Virat, he doubted the man would back down from an old-fashioned fight to death.
Well, time to find out the state of play, Aman said to himself.
He lifted his night vision binoculars and glassed the sanctuary.
he spotted motorcycles lined up in front of the main building, forming a defensive barrier. In the windows, silhouetted against the light, were dark figures holding long, tubular, metallic shapes.
Gunmen guarding the perimeter, Amon thought. Good. You are indeed a son of a gun, Vidat.
We are good to go, Amon said to one of his guards, who pressed a radio to his mouth and shouted commands.
Fifteen vehicles, cars, SUVs and motorcycles emerged from the darkness as they tore down the highway and parked themselves in a neat row facing the compound. Scores of gunmen stepped off the vehicles and took up their positions.
Amon would let the artillery do the critical damage before riding his cavalry down there. He just wanted to be there to walk amongst the smoking rubble, to pump bullets into bodies crushed by masonry or half-compromised by the shrapnel from his army's guns. He was a finisher. That is what he was always good at. Hire the best people in the business, get them to do the heavy lifting, and then waltz in at the last moment and finish the job like a stone-cold closer.
Light this shit up, Amon said.
His bodyguard transmitted those exact words via the radio. Two men with bazookas climbed up on the roofs of the SUVs and sent shrieking projectiles streaking into the buildings. Explosions smashed the stonework, splintered the woodwork, and crushed the cladding as fire swathed the insides of the building. Multiple detonations compromised the structural integrity of the building, and a rain of debris crashed onto the parked vehicles of the attackers. There was a few seconds of awestruck pause, then all the guns barked in unison. The sounds of the night were silenced by the roar of weapons firing. A wall of bullets crashed against the sanctuary's walls. Sustained salvos crafted holes and turned stone to dust. Wood caught fire and metal structures buckled as a constant, unceasing hail of shrapnel tore through the pastor's domain of hope. After a full 10 minutes, the arms fell silent. Only the music of destruction competed against a rising wind. Creaking metal, the crackling of fire. A dust cloud slowly began its ascension into the upper atmosphere.
Nothing can survive that, boss,
one of Amon's bodyguards said. That's the truth right there, son. And you know what I'm thinking? We should do this more often, Amon said without tearing his eyes away from the eyepiece. The cartel boss noted delightfully that the barrier created by the motorcycles were shredded to bits, and the gunmen arrayed in front of the building, in defensive positions, were wiped from the face of the earth. He manipulated the controls on his lens to take a closer look at the bodies of the defenders. He wanted to see if any of them still had their heads intact. As Amon scanned the debris field, looking for dead bodies, he noted something odd. Amon's smile turned to a frown.